and see. Adi, your parents are Israeli. The name Adi is not an American name.
You're recording.
It's Israeli name, Adi. But it was given with that concept, Adi in his Hebrew.
Adiyah.
Adiyah. Adiyah. I have a granddaughter, my eldest great-granddaughter is Adiyah. Adiyah. What would that be in plain Hebrew? I mean, Yiddish, what would it mean? Adiyah. Adin. That's what it comes from. Okay, let's begin. We have a world to do today. First of all, today is November 4th, 2018, and the year is marching on. I say hello to
Marathon in New York.
Half of New York is shut down, but Baruch Hashem, we're here. I say hello to all my students in front of me and to the many listening across the world. I got a lot of comments on my shiur on the Rev of Berlin. It seems it played well, and so many people listened. And all right, ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. We're in the middle of a tshuva on English, in the middle of davening. But before we do that, I have a number of comments to make, and I want to relate to a very interesting question that I received. First of all, I just want to say to my students, Donna and Gerald Parat, I'm very proud that they were the featured family in last week's Makor Rishon magazine, Mochach, and I'm very proud that I had a role inspiring a student of mine in BMT, a student of mine in Machon Golta, Kamen Aliyah, and here they are with, what are they celebrating here? 28 years since their Aliyah, and here they are with all their descendants at this moment in time. So I want to tell you, I tried to call you. I got what I thought were your phone numbers, and all that happened was I called the cellular, and I was told it's disconnected. I then called the landline, and I got a nice lady who didn't slam the phone down and was kind enough to tell me this is not your phone number. Our dear student, Yomo, doesn't understand the Rebbe to a certain degree. He heard me say that Rav Chaim Brisker, we heard from the Rav that Rav Chaim davened early in the morning, Vatikin, went back to learning, and much later caught a minion of Kriyas HaTorah. So Yomo says to me, why can't I emulate Rav Chaim? And I want to tell Yomo a little story. I haven't said a word yet, so I don't expect you to say a word. Thank you for straightening out the classroom. I want to tell you a more little story. We grew up in the Bronx, and Adi, you can't even start to understand this. There were over a million Jews. You can count on the fingers of one hand how many people between the ages of 18 to 70 were Shomer Shabbos. But there was on Washington Avenue Europeish people. I don't know if they went through the Holocaust. I don't think so. They ran to America in the mid-30s. And Balin, the name of the family was Balin. And they had two sons, Shaya and Aaron. Shaya was my age. And Shaya was a genius, an Eloi. And we're in the Rav Shia, and everyone else took notes. And I took on paper, then I rewrote on, but he up all night. My father used to find me, my father would get up at 4 o'clock. He worked in the post office downtown, so he had to take the train by about 5 o'clock, 5:15. And he would find me asleep. But I would write them up nearly. Those notebooks still survive. And they've been of help in writing up the Rav Sheyurim. But Shaya didn't take notes. He wrote on the side of his Gemara. Mm-hmm. And one time the Rav sees him writing Dov on the side of the Gemara. And the Rav says, Balin, ich hab nicht gewusst, dass du bist a Vilna Gaon, dass du kennst, I didn't know you're a Vilna Gaon, that you can make Haggot on the side of your Gemara. And Balin, sitting there in front of the whole class, looks at Rebbe and says, and boy, the Rav, I need not tell you, the Rav gave him a look, he pushed this guy to China. But that was Balin. So I say to Yomo, Yama, what Reb Chaim Brisker did is Reb Chaim Brisker. I don't yet think that Yomo Hachman is on the level of Reb Chaim Brisker. So I differ with Rav Bednesh. I'm permitted to differ with Rav Bednesh. It's Baruch Hashem. He's my colleague. He's a gaon adia, but I differ. Okay. If you recall, we raised the issue of a Rav when he starts to answer a question. Does he have the right to say, I know I have to be mater, I know I have to be machmir, now let me find the reasons. So this happens quite often. So a Talmud listening, Yehuda Halpert, called my attention, the Rav, there's a book out on the Rav's public letters. It was edited by my student, Natty Helfgott. It's both out in English first, and now they translated into Hebrew.
He's the guy in
Teaneck? He's in Teaneck, yes. So, his wife was also my student. So I have to tell you that this was a very famous question. It deserves real research. The attitude of the Gedolei Yisrael to Jews serving in alien armies. We're not talking about Tzvagan Ali Yisrael now. We're talking about alien armies, American armies, Polish armies, etc. So the whole question of the chaplaincy. So the American government was pressing Yeshiva University, we need chaplains. And Dr. Belkin wanted to institute a goral, how would you say that in English?
A lottery.
And if you got a low number, you had to go into the chaplaincy. So the students complained of being coerced. The chaplaincy, who knows, how can you, what will be with Kashrut, Shabbat, etc. So the Rav wrote a tshuva. So the Rav begins the tshuva where he says, we have to be lenient in this matter. We're citizens of America, but let's see halachically if we can justify a lenient approach. So that's another example where he began with a certain shtanz before he actually did the tshuva. And the Halpert, Yehuda, writing to me, gives me a number of examples, fascinating examples. But he says, Reb Shol Yisraeli, I trust you've all heard the name, was known to walk around with a pincus in his pocket, a little notebook. And when a student asked him what was written in the notebook, he responded it was a list of difficult answers which he had paskin, which he knew to be correct, but had yet been able to find a clear halachic source to justify his conclusion. So, you see, you got to keep on thinking, and there is a rabbinic tradition, particularly, as I told you, I don't have time now, but if you've read my, studied my third volume of Rakafar Aron, you'll see with Agunat and Mamzeret, there is a rabbinic directive that you have to do everything in your power to see if you can be lenient. So there is truth to that, and I stand on what I said, and I appreciate these additional examples. A question that came in, which is very fascinating, and I'm going to show you something, make a connection that I believe you will find interesting. Bram Wakes, I believe he's from South Africa, if I'm not mistaken. So he sent me a copy. This is Vaharevna, More Halakhic Challenges and Solutions Based on the Weekly Pasha, based on the Shayurim of Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. Some of you know Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein from Bnei Brak, son-in-law of Rabbi Yashiv, I believe. Tremendous posek. My brother used to go to his shayurim weekly. He was when he was at Laniato. Tremendous insight in medical questions. That's what he specializes in. So now the following question came up, and I'm asked for my opinion, and I have to say I can't believe this is what he paskin. But again, you're hearing it second, third hand. But the question is very simple. I'll pick on Jack and Etty. Watch, Jack. Gave Etty a ring, and she lost the ring. And now they're yelling at each other. Jack says, I spent $1,000 on the ring. And Etty says, why, you go and spend $1,000. The ring was never, you never saw it with that. It fits my finger properly. It fell off. And they're arguing about it. And their son will pick on Adi. Adi, you get very upset that your parents are arguing. So you go and you borrow $1,000 from your friend. And you go to the jewelry shop and one more ring like that is left. You buy it. And you give it, I found the ring, and you give it to your mother, and your father and mother, peace has descended upon the house. But now you got to pay back the $1,000. And the question is, are you allowed to lift the money from your father's drawer? You don't tell him, you take $1,000 and pay back. No, it's not your money, it's your father's money. You didn't tell him. So, excuse me?
He's a
Ganav. Chaim Herbie Moss Paskind, he's a Ganav. Mm-hmm. Rab Zilberstein Paskind, that you're allowed to do it. They quote him that it brought Shalom Bayis. He doesn't give a reason. What's the reason? He said he consulted with Rav Kanyevsky. No, Moshe, what do you say? So the person writing to me says, maybe Hefke Beitin Hefke. I'll tell you. This question, there's no Hefke Beitin Hefke here. It's simply forbidden. It's your father's money, not yours. He wanted to do something good. True, I would go and whisper to my father, look, Dad, I know this was not right, but I didn't want to see Mom so upset, and I didn't want to see you arguing, so I went and did this. Maybe you can help me pay back the money. But that's my humble opinion. Again, this is, anyone who takes it later will see that these are, it's done chaplap. You can't really tell what the actual tshuva was, because it's only quoted without sources. But you know what that reminded me of? Now I take you, when I read it, I started to laugh. My dear students, are you allowed to sit in the chairs in this room? Dov, you studied in Yeshiva University. How many years? 7 years. I was there from time immemorial, from 51 till 69. I either was a student or teaching in uptown. Yomo, you studied. Were you allowed to sit in the chairs? And what's the Shaila? Moshe, what's the Shaila? Moshe, have you ever heard Arnold is a nice name? I was born Arnold Rothkopf. There's a guy who had a name very close to mine, Arnold Rothstein. Can you tell the class who Arnold Rothstein was?
He's a gangster.
1882, 1928, blown away. The biggest Jewish gangster that ever lived. He was never proven, but what the... Chaim, your grandson, knows everything, not just Shas and Peskin. He was accused of the Black Sox. He takes after what the Zeta would have been if not for Hitler, let's be honest. So the Black Sox scandal, the World Series that was thrown, he was accused, was never proven. But the chances are he certainly made money, he was involved, though, a gangster par excellence. Who is his father? His father was Avraham Rothstein. A Yiddish tzaddik, who was his older brother, Harry. Harry studied in the very yeshiva you're studying right now, Yeshivas Reb Yitzchak Elchanan. That was his older brother studying. Don't know if he ever got smicha, probably went into the father's business, but good, firm, solid Jews. So this was the youngest son. What would happen? Friday night, the whole family was at the Suda, and Kiddush, and Shmira, and Divrei Torah, and Benching. After it was all over, Arnold would sneak into his father's little office in the house, his desk and everything, open the desk drawer, and pull out, count it out, $1,000, $1,500. These were not poor people. They were big supporters of Yeshiva Tzvi Yitzchak, and that's why. Could be the very chairs you sat on in New York were chairs that were bought by the money that the Rothstein family donated, including Arnold. Take the money, go cross town, join his friends, gamble away the whole Shabbat. Inevitably, he won money by hook or crook. Saturday night after Abdullah sneak into his father's room and replace the $1,500 he took out before Shabbos and the $3,000 profit that he made, he put into his pocket. So this Shaila brought back to mind Arnold Rothstein. I have to say, very, very fascinating, but I don't agree you have a right to rob from your father in financial item. Okay, this... what is going on here, the connection to my Sheyurim, was that someone doing a small sin to save people from a big sin. So the son robbed from his father, but he was able to stop the parents from fighting and ruining Shabbos, which was around the corner. It was all on a Friday. So this is the connection. That's how it came to me. Halachalam, I don't argue about this. Just let it be.
Shiva Sarama, where he talks about speaking Motzi Shemra
Motzi
Shemra for peace, which is ironic that you could have that situation, but the Rama talks about...
What do you mean, Motzi Shemra for peace?
He was talking about, in a certain situation, it's a long tshuva, but in the circumstances that we're talking about, Rama talks about it, he says that we're allowed, we find that we're allowed to lie for peace and get violating Vashak Kirtirka.
But here there's Geneva. I can understand what you're saying. I can understand the white lie is permissible. White lie is permissible for the sake of shalom, shalom bias, etc., etc. The halachic definitions. It's an open Gemara. And I don't have to tell you, what about a shidduch? I don't know, Mishnah Brewer, and I mean his other writings he deals with in depth, but. I don't see a comparison to here. All right, let me go one step further. Steve Gross, he says, the Rav announcing pages is functioning as a Kli Kodesh. Why don't he say where he's performing a service for his congregants, a service he is employed for? No disrespect. So he's like a doctor attending a patient. Was someone being rodeh patmei hatana for some unrelated third party? And I understand what Steve is saying is, what are we coming down on the rabbi, and whoever's announcing the pages? It's like a doctor. But I'll tell you what the difference is. A doctor, Ein Hachinami, is allowed to do anything and everything to help a patient. That's what it means being a doctor. Shabbos plays no role, Kashrut plays no role, Pikuach Nefesh is Doicha Kol Torah Kol, except the three major Averot. But here, he can be a Kli Kodesh, but he's interrupting his own davening. He's in the middle of Yishtabach and beyond, and he's announcing pages. He's before Shmoneh Esrei, and he's telling everyone the laws of Shmoneh Esrei and what you're saying, what it's about. It's different. Here he's interrupting, he's doing a sin in his very action. And that's the Shaila. Are you allowed to do a small sin to save people, enable them to daven? With a medical doctor, there's no sin involved. This is why the alternative was, let him daven the yechidut, like Yomo suggested. And once he davens b'yechidut, he can announce everything from today to tomorrow. So, all right, that's a more legitimate question. Reb Moshe recommended that, and then you can say, well, he missed minyan, he because he wants to help the tzibur. So he did a little sin. Raketitz have said a guy missed minyan, but all right, he's helping the tzibur. But there's a distinct difference between them. Finally, if anyone wants this. I have a wonderful Talmud. His father is my Talmud. He's my virtue. He's my sub-Talmud, Rabbi Yoshua Grinstein. Maybe you recognize the name. He runs one of the administrators of the program of placing rabbis all over the world for Rabbi Riskin, particularly places where no other rabbi wants to go. They don't want a Chabad Rav, so they place from its functions out of Efrat. And he did. These are all the sources on doing inviting a Jew on Shabbat if he will probably try. It's the classic case, it's the case that we all deal with, the case that we all suffer from, and halacha l'maisa, what can you do, what can't you do, what do the achronim say, and he has all the sources collected here from Shas and Paiskim all the way down to Reb Moshe and the Abiya Omar. Okay, now back here. We're picking up again, and today is a very important basic shiur. It's a shiur that goes way beyond the narrow question, as you will see. We're picking up in the Mishnah Halachat Chelek Bet Siman Ayin Aleph. And are you allowed to daven in English? Are you allowed to daven in Spanish? Are you allowed to daven in French? Are you allowed to daven in all these different languages because you don't know Hebrew?
Why not?
Relax, Herbie. And as I showed you last week, there's an open Gemara in Sota, the Gemara in Sota, Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, that Tefillah is pleading with God for what our needs are, and therefore you're allowed to pray in any language. It's a plea to God. You have to plead in the language you understand. And the Gemara asks, but didn't Rabbi Yochanan say that when you daven in Aramaic, the angels will not help you lift your prayers up because the angels do not know Aramaic? And the Gemara answers, Habi Yachid Habitzibur, that when you're davening alone, you need the angels' help in lifting your prayers. And therefore, you can't daven in Aramaic. But when you're davening with the tzibur, you can even daven in Aramaic. You don't need the angels. God is listening. A minion has more power than Yomo davening by himself. And therefore, you can even daven in Aramaic. All right, that's the simple pshat in the Gemara. From the Gemara, you see very clearly that you can daven in any language. And I would say Herbie's gut reaction is absolutely right. Now, I'm going to go further in a second, but what you find in the Rishonim already, and it carries right over to the 20th century in the Mishnah Berurah, who are we talking about? Nashim, women. Women don't know Hebrew. And if I could take you in a time machine and go back in time, if you go into the shuls in Europe, you went into the women's section, there'd be a woman standing up. She was called a farzaga. She would say the prayers in advance, and the women would mimic the Hebrew, because this was the reality. I don't want any feminist to come along and say, take it, look at what the Rebbe showed us, a Magen Avraham, the Rebbe showed us, the Mishnah Berurah, I'll show it to you in a few minutes. And it says, women don't know Hebrew. What are you talking about? Women today are the greatest experts in the Hebrew language. How dare you say that? Professor Nechama Leibovitch didn't know Hebrew. Adi, did you know Professor Nechama Leibovitch? Do you know that she knew English perfectly? Are you aware of it? She never spoke in public any other language than Hebrew on principle. And did you read Washington, Adi? How do you know how to breathe there? If you have not mastered Washington, you do not know how to breathe air. And I can give you many examples where you're not breathing properly, but we'll leave that for another time. But in Washington, the author tells that Nechama Leibovitch used to beat the heck out of him. Day in and day out. We taught together in BMT, we taught together in Machon Gold, we taught together in the Kollel. I brought her into the Kollel. And why do I speak English? And she was adamant. I said, Nechama, yesh yirak shana achat l'tfalsotam. You know, understand me? I have 1 year to capture them. They'll learn Hebrew later, but if I don't inspire them, the poor rats are not going to come in Aliyah. Remember what I said to 10 minutes ago? And she was adamant Hebrew. So the chutzpah, Nashim don't know Hebrew, but you see, this is a reality. Look at the sugya in Sota, where it talks about Kol Habalam Made Bitul Torah Ki Evil Limda Tiflut. Look into Rashi; it was a different lifestyle, and here you have to understand something. Happiness is an expression of social content. In other words, what's happiness for me? Let me be honest. Happiness for me. Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream. Evidently, the rabbinate lifted its ban. I saw. So it's evidently they. Someone told them you're a bunch of idiots, and they wised up. I remember I was very upset when I heard about the ban. So Häagen-Dazs coffee ice cream. Häagen-Dazs. Entenmann's donuts. When Entenmann became kosher in the 70s, and I am giving Edut Nemana. In the halls of this building, the B&T boys were dancing. Entenmann's became kosher. What a simcha. And all right, an Entenmann donut. And they make, I got donuts when I was in America. I think it was in YU, when I was American March for YU. There were donuts, chocolate covered with white glazing chocolate on top, double dipped. Adi. This makes me happy. What are you, an idiot? But you see, it's a social factor. If you were in the Dar HaMidbar, we're eating manna, you would be the happiest person in the world. So happiness, a good deal of it. All right, I admit to have nice children and grandchildren, have a nice job, that's universal happiness. But a great deal of happiness is social factors. You now go talk. I taught students. I'll give you an example from the Sutton family, Sitton Sutton. Their great-grandparents had 3 wives, 4 wives, 50 children. You know how many descendants there are? I can tell you endless stories where Suttons meet Suttons, Sitton meet Sitton.
Do you know what the name Sutton stands for?
Svadi Tahart. That's what it comes from originally. So now you're going to ask these women, are you happy that your husband has 3 wives? It's wonderful. We share the work. We share the responsibility. This is the way my mother lived. This is the way my grandmother lived. Adi, are you married? All right, you're going to go out with a girl. I want you to say the following to the girl. Sweetheart, I want to propose to you the way my Rebbe taught me to propose. Hitler killed so many Jews. The Jews have no greater need than children. I'd like you to be my wife, but on condition I can marry 3 other women so I can have endless children. You know what she'll do to you? She'll smack your face and run away so quickly that you'll think she was a rocket. Dov, am I right or wrong? But what are you dealing with here? It's social factors. Today, you can't do what went on in Morocco or went on in Franco-Germany 1,200 years ago. Follow me? So when it comes to women, it was a different lifestyle. Women got engaged at 12, at 13, got married at 13, 14. There was no time to learn, no time to study. Women had to run a house, had to take care of children. They matured at a young age. Women died younger than men, by the way. You can find that in the halachic literature, in the responsa literature. Today, women live longer than men, right or wrong. Even in Israel, even in America, in Russia, the women live 20 more years than the men statistically because of the drunkenness. The men are always on vodka. But even in the civilized world where we're not always walking around drunk, particularly on Sunday, if you're ever in Russia under a communist on Sunday, it was beyond belief how much vodka was consumed. But women live longer than men today. But in those days, Deipaka had no time to learn. And generally speaking, outside of a few women like the daughters of Rashi, like Bruria, we have many examples, like the great-grandmother of Rav Shlomo Luria, most women were not learned, didn't know how to read, and that's why when they talk about davening in any language, in the vernacular, automatically they say, this sha'ila applies to women. Okay? So it's not to be offended, it's simply a reflection of the reality of life.
What happened to
his
brother?
Herbie, let me ask you a different question. People have 6, 7, 8 children. 6 remain tzaddikim, and 2 were demonstrating last night, blowing whistles while Hanegbi spoke. You follow me? That's life. It's an open Gemara. You'll see in Ketuvot, Do you have a right to say you're going to go and tell some parent you have a son named Moshe, he's a gong, give him $1 million? You have another son, he doesn't want to learn, he doesn't want to study, he skips minyan, give him $10 and that's it. Gemara says, absolutely not, because you never know what's going to be the next generation. And that's the way God made life. Freedom of choice. If there wouldn't be freedom of choice, we wouldn't have Schav Onish, we wouldn't have the whole concept of religion, of Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, of Rosh Hashanah, of Yom Kippur. Freedom of choice, and believe me, we all have freedom of choice. Do we choose properly? Listen, my heart, you saw what went on last week. Go and explain to the next generation, to my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, that in Degel HaTorah they're celebrating in B'nai Brak, and the speaker mentions the Vishnitzer Rebbe, they start to boo and boo and shout and boo. Freedom of choice. That's Chinuch. This is Torah. I came into Shul Shabbos. Anyone in here know Monty Nussbaum? My own Monty greeted me when I came to Yeshiva Salanta, a kid, first grade, 1943, 42, whatever. Monty opened the door and welcomed me. He was one grade ahead of me. That's how long we know each other. So we sit next to each other for Shabbos morning minyan, 6:30, for about 50 years now in Ohel Rivka. And Monty is all upset. The Gerich Siddim are going to make a Machalos Shabbos. Monty heard Berkowitz speak at Avichai, and the crowd was 99% Anglos, religious, with kippot and tichels. And the moron says, we don't need shoes on Shabbos, but we need food. All the food stores should be open. And this Menuvel is going to be the next mayor of Jerusalem, made by Frum Jews. And Monty's all upset. I said, Monty, you're living here longer than I am. He's here from 65. I'm here from 69. I said, what does Agudat Yisrael, Gerich Siddim, and all that have to do with religion? Nothing. You're shocked? I'm not shocked at all. Yeah. Oh, did he smile? Did he feel better? No, we know. Okay, leave it be. Leave it be. Don't ask. My grandsons were in the Friday. They had a big Kiddush initial. They were shopping for the Kiddush. And they met a whole group of Gerich Siddim. And my grandsons are friendly kids. Vic knows the younger one. And they started talking with the Gerich Siddim. And the Gerich Siddim said, you're absolutely right. We wouldn't vote for Berkowitz. We don't want a Machalos Shabbos. But if the Rebbe tells us, we will vote for him. That's what they told my guy. He said to me, Sabu, they're off the wall. I'm a Chalos Shabbos. And they'll vote for him if the Rebbe tells them. But I said, look, at least they told you they agree with you that he shouldn't be the mayor. Anyway, Zolazayn, the mayor Zolazayn Gizund, life continues. And let's come back to Torah Hashem Tamima. Now, this Gemara, there are many, many different explanations. What does it mean? What does it mean that Bitsibur, you can't say Aramaic, you can say Aramaic, privately you can. So Reb Menashe Klein quotes other Rishonim with an entire different shot that the truth of the matter is that you can daven in any language and you can daven in Aramaic. But the angels were worried that Aramaic is closer to Hebrew than any other language. So that if they allow you to daven in Aramaic, you won't master Hebrew at all. So therefore, when you're davening b'yechidot, any language, but not Aramaic. Because the angels reject it. They don't want it. They hate it. They want you to learn Hebrew. But in the Tzibur, where the angels play no role, okay, there you can use Aramaic. And the Menashe Klein goes on with many different pshatim in the Gemara. But now, what's the halacha? Orachayim, Kuf Aleph, Sif Katan Dalet. Yachal hipalel b'chol lashon sheyitzeh. can daven any language. Hani mila b'tzibur. Avol b'yochet lo yitpalel ela b'lashon hakodesh. But when you're davening in yechidut, daven in lashon hakodesh.
Why?
We'll come to it. V'yeshomrim. The honey mila kisha shoel tzrachav kagon shehit palel al hachole o al shum tsa sheyeshlo beveto avo betvila hakfu le tzibo afilu yachad yachola amro b'chol lashon. V'yesh omrim di af yachid kisha shoel tzrachav Yachol ishol b'chol lashon sheyitze chutz milashon arami. Look into the Magen Avraham. If you don't know Hebrew, that's when you are allowed to pray in any other language. And the Mishnah Brura on this very siman, Sivkatan Yudchet, explains that the Malachim know every language, but they don't like Aramaic. That's the one they're mad at. And therefore, Umishim Hachi, according to the Mishnah Brura, Muteret Hanashim Lehit Palel B'chol Lashon. That therefore women, I don't know today, are there more women who don't know Hebrew? Or men who don't know Hebrew. All I know is in the United States, when they finally decided that women can be rabbis, Jewish Theological Seminary has more women students than men. Hebrew Union College has more women students than men. Sally Prezant, the first woman rabbi ordained in America, not the seminary, she was Hebrew Union College. She graduated HUC. By the way, the original women who were ordained in the HUC, the seminary, many of them never married. They became like nuns, totally committed to being a spiritual person, a spiritual leader, no time for marriage, no time for children, no time for family life. A tragedy is embroiled in what I just told you. But more women. I'm willing to bet you that in the United States of America, there are more women who know Hebrew than men. But
believe me,
I gave lectures about 30 years ago, 25 years ago in the Kollel, why women are more religious than men. It has to do with a woman's body. It has to do with creation. It has to do with the monthly cycle. It has to do that she feels the presence of God at a very young age, unlike a male who can be a wild animal until he finally hits middle age. It's very true, absolutely.
I mean, a lot of it has to do with work.
Yeah, you can add there are many other factors, there's work, etc. No, but the heart of it is what I just said, and I not only say it on my own, I later heard a shiur from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and he said exactly the same thought. But coming back here, when they talk about women, again, it's not because women are second-rate citizens, it's because that was the reality of life. So that's why they talk about, even the Mishnah Brura, writing this 120 years ago, speaks about Nashim. But halacha lemaisa, Hebrew, davening in Hebrew, has a tremendous advantage. In any other language, if you daven, it's impossible to know for sure how to translate the words. Give you a simple example from the most important prayer of all, Kriyat Shema. V'hayu letotafot bein einecha. I challenge anyone to translate the word totafot. Totafot. Coptic word, Greek word. What does it mean? The advantage of davening in Hebrew is you don't have to translate. And because that's the way Anshei Knesset HaGadolah put the prayer down, edited the prayer, composed the prayer, you're Yotzei even if you don't understand. That's the big advantage in Hebrew. I'll give you another word, which is a Hebrew word. How do you translate? Vishinantem levanechem. Vishinantem. How do you translate that? What does it mean? Teach them, hit them, push it into them, drive it into them, sharpen it that they should understand, be clear in teaching. It means all these expressions. How do you translate it? Vishinantem levanecha. And this is why true, when you make a request, you want to feel that you understand what you're saying. And this, yes, Herbie is right. Me'ika hadin, you can daven in any language. But davening in Hebrew, even if you don't totally understand it, is tremendous advantage, because this is the lashon that Chazal were metaken, they were medayek in every word, and your yotzei even if you don't understand it entirely. And this is halacha lama'aseh. There's another thought behind it that the achronim all bring. Tell me, when you speak to a king, what language do you speak in? All right? Let's begin at the beginning. The Yom Kippur War. Yom Kippur War hit the Jews very hard. The state of Israel could have been wiped out. We now know from all that's being published of the secret documents that Moshe Dayan spoke in terms of a Churban Bayit Shlishi. At least he knew that much, that there was a Bayit Rishon, a Bayit Sheni. He was frightened stiff. There was even talk that Israel would use an atomic bomb to defend itself. Right or wrong, these are no secrets today. I lived the Yom Kippur War. Believe me, we still don't know how Egypt didn't reach Beersheba to make Havdalah after Yom Kippur, and Syria didn't reach Tel Aviv to make Havdalah. It's still a tremendous puzzle. Rak min ha-shamayim zikunu. So now, because all the money started flowing into Israel, I'm telling you a true story now, the yeshivot was suffering. So the Vad HaYeshivot, what remained in Israel and elsewhere, they pleaded with the American Rabbanim, and Orthodoxy was now center stage in America, not as much as today, but already was on the stage, to meet with the Joint Distribution Committee and plead for the yeshivot. And here was a delegation with the greatest gadol in the United States, 1974, acknowledged Reb Moshe Feinstein was in the delegation. Moshe, who did they ask to be the speaker of the delegation?
The Rav.
The Rav, exactly. I told the story many times. I wrote about it. Why did they ask the Rav? Because his English was on a very high level. Rav Moshe could speak English, skivan a Yiddish English. The Rav
spoke with an accent.
The accent, they all spoke with accents, but the Rav's English was on an unbelievable level. And it was, by the way, a very, very blessed choice. You all know the story with the Rav. I've told it over many times. If you recall, the Rav, the JDC, here are these people headed up by a Reform Jew. And the Rav says, "Gentlemen, I've waited many years for this moment to thank you." And he says, "Let me tell you a story. I was a little boy in Cheder, in Chaslovich, during World War I. And one day we came to Cheder, and I saw all my friends dancing and thanking and singing and thanking. Thank you, Uncle Joint. Thank you, Uncle Joint." And I said, "What is the simcha?" And they showed me that a big sack of chocolate cocoa powder had arrived for chocolate, hot chocolate, for the students in the Cheder. and I owe you a big thank you for what you did for me as a child. And then the Rav went further. He said, I owe you a second thank you. He says, in my youth, I never saw a Gemara that wasn't ripped, that was missing pages, that was tattered. And the Rav said, I came to my uncle's home, Rav Velvel, when he was in Warsaw, and he had a beautiful Gemara, a total set, and all the pages were there. And I asked my uncle, where did you get it? And he said, open up the first page, there's a dedication. The joint made Shas available. It was published, and I spoke about it in this class a few years ago. It was published in Canada, and all these sets were sent to the famous Rabbanim all over the world, including my uncle. I owe you a big thank you. And Rabbi Klavan was with the Rav and part of the delegation, said this multi-millionaire Reformed Jew who didn't know what Shabbat was and Kashrut was, took out his paper and his pen and said, Rabbi Soloveitchik, tell us what you want. We will do anything you say. And that was very smart. Imagine had they asked Reb Moshe Dov, imagine they asked Reb Moshe. No, if you and I were sitting there, we would be trembling. Am I right or wrong, Vic? Reb Moshe. But the Rav speak. So whenever you go to the king, you have to speak the language. This is why whenever the Chofetz Chaim went to see the president of Poland, they always took along people who spoke Polish. And their stories are legendary. So if you're talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam, how was the world created? The world was created in Hebrew. Hebrew is Lashon HaKodesh. What do we read? What do we study? Everything we do, Tanakh, Lashon HaKodesh. You're talking to God. Make an effort to learn Hebrew. Speak to the king in his language. You want a favor from the king. You want someone to be well. I'm davening this morning for two people. I mentioned their names. Lashon HaKodesh. This is the way prayer has to be. So you see, Herbie, there's
the
no...
The people of Marfa, they think it's Yiddish.
No. No one ever said that the words... As far as I know, in Barapak, they lay in Nishta Teda and unfind that the Abish the Bikishafin, the Himmels and the Lan.
They
speak Yiddish, but not when they lay in. But they shit Barash. Right or wrong, Vic, am I right? Michael, in Philadelphia, they lay in Hebrew or they lay in Yiddish? They lay in Hebrew. So, you see, there's a lachatchila and a bidiyavad. And certainly you yotze in any language. But lachatchila, you should try to master Hebrew. Well, I'm not going to go much further now. Now I want to say something about the Rambam.
Give me a Rambam, please. Chelek Aleph. I don't have it here. It must be there.
Let's hope there's a Rambam Chelek Aleph Hil Hizman I need. Yeah, I'll show you something. Careful of the wire. Show you something interesting. Shabbos, Chamsim Matzah, Sukkah, Lulav Shkolim, Shachaydesh, Tanyot. That's what I want. Okay, now open up the Rambam, Hilchot Chanukah, Perek Gimel, and you're going to see something amazing. I heard this from the Rav. The Rambam begins with a long historical discourse about Hanukkah. How did Hanukkah come to be? Bayacheni, Kitshamalcha, Yavan, Gazrugazay, Rapal Yisrael. And it tells the whole story, Halacha Aleph, Halacha Bet, Ukisha Gavru Yisrael, Al Yavehem, etc., etc. And finally, in Halacha Gimel, it starts to talk about Hilchot Hanukkah. So the Rav asked a very simple question.
Well,
the Rambam is a sefer of halacha? Since when does the Rambam get involved in giving all the details, all that it had to say? There was a miracle, and as a result of this miracle, go into the halacha, the halel, the simcha, the hadlakat neirat, and all that goes into Hanukkah. So the Rav said, no. Halacha Aleph and Halacha Bet is also a halacha. It's telling us something. Read it carefully. And the Rav reread it, and he said, you know what we learned from this? That a Jew has to do everything he possibly can. Only after all the hishtablut, that's when God will do the miracle. And that's what the first two halacha teaching us. We rebelled, we revolted, we fought, we had an army. Only afterwards, you did all you can, then God takes over and did the miracle. Very, very fascinating. That's Hilchot Chanukah. Now take a look, Hilchot Brachot, Perek Aleph, Halacha Dalet. And you see here, halacha dalet, a long, long halacha and hilchot brachot. And when you approach it, you start to think, wow, it's a historic document. Kivin shagol Yisrael b'nei nuchat netzah harasha. Nitavu b'paras v'yavin v'sha'u umot. Jews went into galus. We mixed and assimilated with many other countries, with many other cultures. It's a description of today as well. Australia, South Africa, United States, Canada, France, Britain. Where were you born? Israelis run to America. Los Angeles is filled with hundreds of thousands of Israelis. Florida, hundreds of thousands. Berlin, Lavalenu, Israelis. Cape Town, Israelis. Wherever you go, you'll see Israelis. They're Israelis. But where are their kids born? Do you know that in America, the highest rate of assimilation is among Israelis? They have nothing to do with the shul. They have nothing to do with the community. They don't speak the same language. Their kids wind up, generally speaking, totally assimilating, intermarrying. You have famous ball players today. Right or wrong, one of the most famous ball players, his father is Israeli. His mother, Braun, his mother is not Jewish. It's unbelievable. People call him a Jew. He's not a Jew halachically. And this is inevitable. By the way, in parentheses, let me tell you, Chabad does a lot of great work here. They have a way of reaching Israelis. I remember sitting in an office in Florida, in Sunny Isles, Florida, in a Chabad shul, and I'm sitting there learning. I was right outside the office. The door was open, and there's an Israeli mother and father come with the kid. And I quote the conversation to you. He knows Hebrew. And they say to him, you know that if we'd be in Israel, we wouldn't be in a shul, we wouldn't be interested in the bar mitzvah. But here, we want the kid to remember he's Jewish. And the Chabad guy took on this kid, who knows, today he may be a big Talmud Chacham. They know how to reach these Israelis. But the mother's comment was very interesting. In Israel, who goes into a shul? Who goes into a shul in North Tel Aviv? How many of those 25,000 people who demonstrated yesterday in memory of Rabin, how many of them went to a shul Shabbos morning? So the Rambam is describing it as it is. Oh, wow. Like us. No, what's my native language? English. What's Jack's native language? English. Dove, what's your native language? But not your father. His line it was Yiddish, right or wrong. Right. You're an English right away. You're a Yiddish, you're yet from the old country. Yomo's native language, you knew what was the first language you spoke? Ukraine? Russian? Russian is the Ukraine they speak Russian?
Russian and Ukrainian.
Russian and Ukraine.
Family spoke Russian.
Oh, what a description here. What's going on with this Rambam? He quotes a pasuk v'neim chatzim edaber ashdodit v'yena makirim ledaber yehudit ulekashon am va'am. And wow, each one, some spoke a jargon. Herbie speaks Yiddish. No, since when is Yiddish a language? Yiddish is a jargon. There were some people of the Enlightenment, our scholar, the original Zionists, the social Zionists, some of them had enmity towards Hebrew. It's a disgrace. It's not a language. It's a jargon. And what do we speak? We speak English. We speak our Yiddish English. I grew up, my English was certainly not pure after I finished so many years in yeshiva. And the Rambam is describing this. What a description. They couldn't daven in Hebrew. They didn't know Hebrew. They approached the Kaddish Baruch Hu with a jargon. And mitnezeh, and he goes on and on. And he says, "V'kivin sha'ar ra'ah Israel beitino kach amdu v'tignu lechem shmon esrei brachot al haseda." And when Ezra and his beitin, and ultimately this feeds down to the Anshei Knesset Hagadola, saw that the Jews couldn't speak Hebrew, didn't understand Hebrew, and they saw that they want to pray, they went and they formalized the prayer, they formalized the siddur. Shalosh rishonot shevach l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu, shalosh acharonot hodaya v'emtzaiyot, and the middle ones, yesh bem shilat kol ha'davarim she'im kamo avot l'chol chapseich ish ish u'letzachei tzibah kolam, whatever anyone needed, you prayed with God for the individual, for refuah, for bina, for health. You prayed for the Kehila, for Shoftim, for Kibbutz Goliath, for Yerushalayim, and so everyone should have the same prayer. V'yelamdu otom v'tiyet tfilat elu ha'alagim tfilah shleima ketfilat bal halashon atzacha ubetnei inyin zeh tiknu kol ha'brachot v'atfilot masdurot b'fi kol Yisrael. Kedei she'kol inyan bracha aruch b'pi ha'elag. That any.
Ezra and Nechem, you brought out the riffraff. Those that were Talmid Chacham and the rich, they remained involved.
I wouldn't call them the riffraff. They came in Aliyah, and they're the ones who built the Second Commonwealth. I don't know if all the Talmid Chacham remained in Babel, but those who loved the good life did remain in Babel. Yeah. You're correct. That therefore, the Levium, the Kohanim, there were all types of problems. But we have the Second Commonwealth due to Ezra and Nehemiah, no different than the Third Commonwealth today, when who came in Aliyah? The riffraff, the frum Jews were told, stay Rav behind.
Said, in that period and in the start of the of Eretz Israel.
Who built Eretz Israel? Exactly. Bilu, Be'jakov, Lechu, Elcha, but Be'ar Hashem they forgot about. But look what they built. Look how they saved the Jewish people. I tell you to go back to our Kippur lectures on religious Zionism and you might see the whole total picture. But let's come back to this Rambam. What is this? A history book? Moshe? I'm playing the Rav's game now. I'm asking the exact question. What a description. They went into exiles. They didn't speak the language. They spoke a jargon. They couldn't put two words together properly in Hebrew. That's why the Anshei Knesset Hagadola formulated the prayer. Oh no. This description in Halacha Daled is a lot more than history. It's a halacha. due to the realities of human existence, of human frailty, the human situation, we'll call it that, the Anshei Knesset HaGadola, going back previously, Ezra Beit Dino, understood very well, we must have one formulated single prayer that will unite the Jews all over the world. And Jews born in the Ukraine, like Yomo, whose native language is the Russian language, who maybe heard a little bit Yiddish from his grandparents, when he learns how to daven, he's going to daven in Hebrew, exactly like Dov Zakheim, whose father and uncle, whom I knew, were Shanghai survivors, going to daven in Hebrew, going to daven the same way. And the people, you got it. And the people in the Shtiblach, in Katamon, you hear so much French, but when they daven, it's with a French accent. Their Yekis daven with a German accent. Americans, you can spot right away with their American accent. But everyone davens in Hebrew. That is the secret of our survival, of our continuity, of our fellowship, of the whole concept of Am Yisrael. And this is a very, very powerful halacha. And this halacha, that you must remain in Hebrew, is what the secret of prayer that's kept us Jewish, that's enabled us to survive with all the gullus that we went into. And you take a look at Eliezer ben Yehuda, had one dream to resuscitate Hebrew. He grew a beard, he grew payas, his wife wore a shetel. They wanted to integrate in the Yishuv HaYashan. They wanted to get rid of the Yiddish. They knew if they wouldn't act like one of them, no one would pay attention. And with it all, he suffered. Take a look at the state of Israel today with so many Goliath, so many different countries represented. Listen to these little kids running on the street, 2 years old, rattling off in perfect Hebrew. This is only because for 2,000 years of Gullus, we davened in Hebrew. It kept our unity. The Rambam here is unbelievable. It may not be b'diavad. Yes, we understand it. It's an open Gemara, b'chol hashon, but on a practical level, the Chachamim were very filled with foresight. They saw the future. And this is the Rambam. This is crucially important. You can be mefalpil from today to tomorrow, the Yachid, the Tzibur, the language, the Aramaic, but this is unity of the Torah people despite all the different countries they lived in. And a later postscript, if I spoke about Eliezer ben Yehuda, so you should know he has great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, Shomrei Torah and Mitzvah. There's a whole branch of the family that came back, B'lei V'Nefesh. Very, very fascinating. Yes, Yomo?
Is the Hebrew that the kids rattle off in, 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds and older, is that the same Hebrew that we daven in?
It's the same Hebrew I daven in, that much I can tell you. You're dealing with a different story. You're talking about the Havara and the pronunciation. So the state of Israel, part of the Great Rebellion, everything we did in Europe, we wanted to change. So even B'nai Akiva, the standard davening in B'nai Akiva is Nusach Sfad. How did they come to Nusach Sfad? Their grandparents were all Nusach Ashkenaz. But this is the standard rebellion. It boils down to the other day, my grandson just said a wedding, he just tied the signed on a hall, we have a wedding date, Matzoi Purim Katan, Matzoi Shushan Purim Katan, I have to look again, February 20th. So we were talking about the Eidot HaMizrach, and my grandson pops up, and I'm marrying a girl from Eidot HaMizrach. First of all, she's only half a Dota Mizrach. Her mother is Ashkenaziya, France. Her father is Parsi. But there is some Russian blood in the Persian element of the family too. But let's assume a Dota Mizrach. I said, no, you're marrying a girl who's an Israeli. And he understood me right away. In other words, in my family, I have a lot of great granddaughters-in-law today. A lot of granddaughters-in-law who are half Eidot HaMizrach. I don't think anyone is total, but half. But they're Israelis. I spoke at a pidyon haben, all the different blood in this kid's veins. I taught his mother, the grandmother, I mean, I'm mixing up generations. I taught his grandmother in Michala in the Israeli division in the early 70s. I didn't know that her father was the Moroccan chief rabbi of Bar Akiva. And she married a Czechoslovakian, second generation. And I spoke about the blood in this kid, Ribbono Shel Olam, Moroccan and Czechoslovakian and Lithuanian and Polish and Hungarian and German. Oh my gosh, what was it in this kid's blood? And the younger generation looked at me, what are you talking about? He's an Israeli, I'm an Israeli, you're an Israeli. And this is the great miracle of Kibbutz Galyot. But it only could be made possible because we kept the Hebrew language. Okay, so far so good. Now we've arrived and I want to bring in the document. A very important document that colors our thinking. Moshe knows what I'm about to refer to, but Moshe doesn't know what I'm about to say, because I'm going to give you a special gift now. One time, you see, when you're the Rav, Mori Rebbe, so, you know, you learn, you have to be very careful what you say in public. It takes time for a big a public figure to learn that at Talmud Chacham, because at Talmud Chacham you want to be honest. You want to be honest. At times your honesty can be misunderstood or it's too sharp, and I need not tell you, Rav Eshef Shechta, what was that? They asked me about women reading a ketuvah, so he mentioned that what's a ketuvah? What I've said to you in class all the time, that a get, you have to write, if you would marry, no one marries a woman with a shtar today, because it would be too hard, as be written, lishmol, lishmol, lishem, kedushin, etc., like you write a get. But a ketuvah is a warranty, it's a bill of sale, that's all. You can pick it out of the garbage and fill it in, and that's it. So Rabbi Heschel said, even in a Maisa Kof, he was paraphrasing the Gemara, that even a monkey can write a ketuvah. So all over the world, what they did to him, that he said a woman is like a monkey, and it's terrible, terrible. They take it, not only take it out of context, they don't know what he's talking about. But you have to be careful. You have to be careful. You don't have a choice. So the Rav learned, what happened when he said about Bartons, remember I told you the story, I think I told it here. I remember telling it in YU at the big one on Pesach, and wow, the audience went crazy. And some of the old timers from the Board of Trustees told me they were there. They remembered it. It was 1954. So the Rav gave a Pesach shiur. So one of the students asked him, Rebbe, are you allowed to eat minutzin? Legume produce, like corn syrup. So the Rav said, nay, where we come from in Litva, we didn't use it, we didn't use legumes, we didn't use legume derivatives, that's the right word, legume derivatives. So another kid pops up, but Bartons uses corn syrup in their candy for Pesach. And the Rav said, no, we shouldn't. This was a Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, Mr. Klein was there. I said Mr. Bartons in my talk. No one corrected me. I picked it up as Mr. Klein, Mr. Stephen Klein, with his lawyers. Oh, what went on in Dr. Bellander. Friday morning, the New York Times had a quarter-page ad. Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik reiterates his total confidence in the Passover supervision of the Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations, and particularly in relation to the Bartons Candy Factory, which is Sabbath observing and Tashrit 100%. But from the next year on, Bartons never again use corn syrup. That's a given. So you got to be very careful. So in the public posture, you heard the Rav. Privately, you could bother him with questions and he would open up his heart to you. So I got to tell you what happened. The Rav was at the RCA convention. RCA convention was always from Monday through Thursday, Tuesday through Thursday, because the rabbis had to go back for Shabbat. So the Pioneer Hotel, the Pineview Hotel, where the conventions were held, these were kosher hotels. So they made a special offer to the rabbis, if you stay through Shabbat, if you retire or you don't have to go back, they made a package deal that you can have another 3 days with your wife at a good price. So this has to be the mid-70s. The fellas convinced the Rav, Rebbe, what do you got to go back to Boston for? Stay with us over Shabbos, Mivel Fabrengen, Sazamen. And many things happened over those next 3 days, including there's a picture of the Rav with a baseball cap on. They went out in a boat with the rabbis, the young rabbis with the Rav, and Rebbe's wearing a cap on his head. But on a serious level, they started talking about the Chatam Sofer. Now, there's no question that Rav Moshe Sofer was the dominant personality in the Hungarian world. He had great influence on the entire Torah world, but certainly on the Hungarian world. The proof of what I just said is correct. I showed you a few years ago that all the Ungarische poskim accept the concept of an Erev. And so much so that they quote the Chatam Sofer, one of his tributes to a Talmud, to raise that there are many problems with an Erev. What's going on here? You have 600,000 people living here, and it's a Reshut HaRabim, and you're putting up a wire, there's no walls. Well, what's going on here? And the Chatam Sofer said to this student, if you're not samach on an Erev, you're an apikairis. He quoted the Tshuvat HaRash. This way an Erev was built throughout the years, and we have many Tshuvat. And Rabbi Menashe Klein, when he's finished being Mati an Erev in Borough Park in Flatbush, so you know, Vic, he quotes the Chatam Sofer. And Ein Hachinami, whenever anyone asks Rakefet, can be samach on this Erev, that Erev, I say, what's the blood in your veins? If you're a Litvak, all right, you want to be Machmir, the Mishkanot Yaakov, you can be machmir. It's not mitzeki yehora. It doesn't mean that you're showing off your religiosity. If you're Polish, you have every right in the world to be mekil and be samach on the Erev, the Bet Ephraim. If you're Ungarische, you have no choice but to be samach on the Erev, or you're big apikoros, the Chatam Sofer. So then the Rav got to talking, and all of you know, I've lectured on this many times in the past, even in the Kollel many years ago. You take the Drushat Chatam Sofer, he was a fabulous Dashan. And in the middle of the Drusha, he would shout out, Chadash Hasur Min HaTeira! And the whole audience would yell back at him, Chadash Hasur Min HaTeira! You can see it in his Drushat. I have the two volumes of his Drushat. Tremendous darshan. I spoke about them. If you met my shirim on Yantav Sheni, 30 years ago, I spent a lot of time on his drasha dealing with Yantav Sheni. So what does it mean? Chadav Shasum in the Torah, he took it literally, not figuratively. He took it figuratively, I should say, not literally. Literally, it means the Isa Chadash using grain before the Ktzirat HaOmer is Asa from the Torah. B'chol makom, quoting the Mishnah in Orla. And he said, Chadash, anything new is forbidden. And he fought all the innovations. Now, the innovations began in Germany. But if you look at a map, Hungary shares a border with Germany at a certain point. So that the ideas of Western civilization, modernity, all the ideas that destroy the world today, begin in Germany, but they cross over to Hungary pretty quick. But there still was a lapse. It's not the computer age where you go online and you're in New York within a minute. Herbie already knows about the marathon in New York and they're shutting down this bridge and that bridge. You look at New York Post, Daily News, you can get local New York stations, you're there in a second. in those years it took time. So I would say from 1762, when Mendelssohn leaves the ghetto, to these ideas germinated in Hungary, it took about 30, 40 years when it starts to germinate. Now, what's the advantage of it taking 30, 40 years? You can see the results. And by that time in Germany, as we have said many times, Mendelssohn did not have a great-grandchild who still went to shul on Shabbos. I'll put it that way. You saw the Bathodi family, the other families that came out of Mendelssohn, wasps, goyim gemurim. You saw the results. So the Chatam Sofer was very adamant. Anything which our parents didn't do is totally forbidden. Chadash asur min haTorah. Plain and simple. And he took this tremendous Reitung stand. And that's why Hungarian Jewry, those of you who have Hungarian blood know the Hungarian Jewish history, it's a very split community. There were either you were very frum, or you were neolog, and beyond neolog, total assimilation. Theodor Herzl's an example, totally assimilated. Then he comes back, at least to Jewish consciousness, as a result of the Dreyfus trial. Neolog was what we would call today middle of the road conservative Judaism. Neolog. And but the orthodoxy in Hungary, there was very, very little of Torum Derech Eretz and modernity. It's Chatam Sofer, and that bordered on Hasidus afterwards, and then you have Munkach and Satmar, and all that goes with it, the greater Hungarian community, because technically Satmar already was not Hungary, but it was still part and under the influence. Chadash Hasun Min HaTorah. So they asked the Rav, "No, what do you think, Rabbi, about the Chatam Sofer?" I'm just asking the Rav, not asking kids like us or asking a professor at Hebrew U. So the Rav let down his hand and he said, he's often thought about it, and he says, he doesn't know. Could be that that Kana'ut was not in place. More Jews would have remained from had there been some accommodation with modernity and Western civilization and innovation, which we could tolerate halachically. Or on the other hand, because he took a stand and was adamant, it saved many from assimilating. And percentage-wise, look at Hungarian Jewry vis-a-vis German Jewry. No matter which way you look at it, a very solid percentage of Hungarian Jewry remained from Chatam Sofer and all that I mentioned, the Hasidic element.
It was actually Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, it's the greater Hungarian area, the greater Hungarian. Bratislava is in what was Czechoslovakia today. But the greater Hungarian area, a lot more remained from than in Germany. In Germany, Shimshofol Hirsch, in one of his essays, describes in the Gesammelte Schrift, in his collected writings, describes the Frankfurt in mind he came to in the early 1850s, when he gave up a big rabbinate. People didn't understand him, and he took on the challenge in the heart of Germany, Frankfurt AM, and he describes there was barely a minion of Shomer Shabbos. You couldn't find Jews who put on tefillin daily. He describes the mikveh, and you know Rakhefetzvot, that if you want to judge the religious tenacity of a community, visit their mikveh and see the way their mikveh is kept up, where it's located, how clean it is, etc. That will show you the religious tenacity. He described the mikveh, I'm quoting Rav Hirsch now, this is what he wrote. It was in a passageway where only swine would walk through. End quote. And that's the way he describes the mikveh in Frankfurt. So you see that the Rav said, yes, I'm interpreting the Rav very simply, that there are people like him in America, the RCA, the Rabbanim he was speaking with, somehow we knew how to balance and to accommodate the Western world. Our shuls are filled with openness, We've made our certain, we make a prayer for the state, we have perhaps a little English davening, we've taken the women down from the balcony, brought them downstairs, made them feel part of the service, they can see what's going on. All that we've done, that halachically we can justify 100%. But maybe the Chatam Sofer, by his extremism and refusing to budge, it could be he created a viable, dynamic, living Torah community which survived the passage of time until this very moment. So it's a very interesting thought, but there's no question the Chatam Sofer Gadol Mirabin Shemor of Meisha Sofer, as I told you, even the Litvakin who tend to ignore Achronim, you can't ignore the Noda B'Yehuda, you can't ignore the Chatam Sofer. And the tshuva that Reb Menashe Klein clothes, and we'll go into detail next week, it's Likutei Tshuvat Chatam Sofer, Tshuva Pei Dalet. It's Chelek Gimel of Shelet and Tshuvat Chatam Sofer, the third volume, and it's towards the end, Likutei Tshuvat Chatam Sofer. It's not divided up, Orechayim, Yoredeya. It's just a collection of Tshuvat of the Chatam Sofer, and it's Tshuva Pei Dalet. And that Tshuva opens a world to us and is the key, and it takes us back to the Rambam I just quoted. And yes, Halacha L'maisa, it's very easy to say. You can daven in English. And I told you, my father had a Birnbaum sitter all with mocked up, and he davened and he ate for this davening and that davening, but his davening essentially was in English. He could read Hebrew, that much he learned in Cheder as a kid in Harlem, but not much beyond that. And that Birnbaum sitter became like his book of life. You couldn't touch it. He had markers all over, and he knew just where to go and where the davening, what the prayer he needed. And that's the Rambam is so crucial to understanding the inside. And don't forget Hilchot Chanukah, which is Chodesh Kislev already. I don't know, Chatnach Ba Yaseret Yemei Tshuva, and here it is Chodesh Kislev. But that I heard from the Rav, and I applied what the Rav said to this Rambam here, and I think Rebbe would agree with me. It's a good analysis. It follows his thinking. It's not just the stories. It's nishta a sipur in Weltarein, a geschicht in Weltarein. It's not a story, just it's a halacha. And Yomo doesn't want to hear this halacha because he's argued with me for the last 6 years already on this halacha that a person has to do whatever he can and only then will God turn over. So, alright, we've continued. Again, if you look into the tshuva, you'll see the Gemara with the Malachim. Do they hate Aramaic? Do they love Aramaic? Do they know Aramaic? Were they worried it would destroy Hebrew? There are many different interpretations. And the women, no one should be offended, because wherever you see they're talking, they take it as a given. The men all know Hebrew. It's just the women who don't know Hebrew. Yes, that was a reality then. It has nothing to do with what has happened in the world today. You know, we're living, I don't think we've worked out all the questions. We're struggling with it. Today, women are totally liberated. They're out of the kitchen. They don't have to clean. The food, I sure, Erev Shabbos, we were on Rehov Emek. My grandchildren all cooked. We were on Emek Rephaim, my grandsons. We were on Emek Rephaim, Lenachi Mavel, Mo Berlin, my classmate, and the Shurim together. Ach, what a great and what a wonderful family he left. So in Emek Rephaim, we see a store. People are waiting in line. Mark and I look in. You can't sit down to eat. All food to take out for Shabbos. No, who has to cook anymore? It's like Malka says, she doesn't understand people who bake challah, she says. You can buy the most beautiful, tasteful challah, it's under 20 shekel, delicious challah, what do you have to bake? But, alright, it's a different world. My daughter shows me, my children already have it, the robot vacuum cleaner. I saw with my own eyes on Friday morning. We went to my daughter, who you know lives right near you, and they got this robot vacuum cleaner, which a grandson got for them. He handles all the orders for the family. He's in high tech. And we punch high. You can see this little round cuckoo running around the floor. And all the dirt is swept up, and there's a box there. God, replenish the island. And so it's a different world, the women. But don't be offended. This what was. And the Mishnah Berurah is describing a reality. And that's what we talk about, the Farzachers. They read Farzacher to say in advance, to say ahead of you. Baruch atah, and the women, Baruch atah, them. They needed that help. There were only a few who knew. Today, Baruch Hashem, it's a different ballpark. Okay. My dear students, have a lot of freebies. Before we start with that, I just want to mention tomorrow's shiur, crucially important. I begin the Bar Hatzalah, which may be Rav Ovadia's most important, not Rav Ovadia, Rav Lazer Silver's most important task and accomplishment. And I'm going to give an interesting introduction, so you should know what we're dealing with here, because it's life and death. Moshe, last week, I checked the Rambam. You were wrong. He was mevatel to get before one. And
right, but a bunch of
Rishonim,
the Beis Yosef talks about it.
Moshe, I'm well aware of it. Read, go into Chelek Gimel. But the Tshuvot, that's why we don't know if the Masham said La Halacha or he wanted Haskamah. Read what I wrote. But Moshe, you can say what you want, but the Masham and Rav Yitzchak Isaac Alevi Herzeg and Rav Avadja Yosef are not on your side. So I'd be a little bit careful. But that's why I was medagdek to say one, the Tosfot. Okay, now be aware. This I found out after the shiur. As I'm giving shiur last Sunday, a Talmud of mine is giving a get al yedei shaliach. Okay? Last Sunday. So I asked him, did you have to do it? Because when you give a get al yedei shaliach, you have to state, make a modah that you will not cancel it, you follow me, you will not abrogate it. So he told me, yeah, I had to say so many different things in English that he understood, and he didn't know what the heck he was really saying, but to be sure that he won't abrogate it while the get is traveling to the woman. You follow?
Yeah, and that happens to be the Meiri explicitly says on that sugya that we hold that you're not Machti Kedushin in this case. There is no Achdus Kedushin in this case. And there's an article in Tchumen by Rabbi Riskin wrote about Achdus Kedushin, and he said on that sugya we paskin that you're not Machti Kedushin. It's against the
Tosfos,
but
not Pashtus and Moshe. No, that's why the Masham said at the end. We're not, of course it's a Chiddush. The Masham Shvadran lived 200, 300 years after the Shulchan Aruch. I once was talking with the Rav about, no, I understand, but look into what I wrote, you'll see what we're talking about. But the Masham Shvadran, I once was talking with the Rav, and we were talking about Rav Chaim Skulis and Treifus. And I knew a little bit how to learn already. This is 78. So I say to Rebbe, the Masham Shvadran also had tremendous Kulis, but he was put into Chayrim. People who wrote they for him. And how come your Zayda, no one... So the Rav broke into a big smile and said, because my Zayda's, he was too smart for them. He didn't publish his kulis. The Masham Shvadran published his kulis.
And a couple of the sources to defend the
Silverstein. Another side, hold it. But it's the father's money.
Right.
How can you take money?
He talks about there might be circumstances where if you're stealing for a positive, it's an interesting. There's an interesting in the first paragraph of Baba Basra. Talks about Eov would steal from steal people's fields and like plant in them, and then he would give it back in even better.
So you hold that he's allowed to say that to me this is, if we let this stand, you wind up with a Ben Sora Mora. It's very frightening.
That's the thing. That's the difference. If you're stealing for your own benefit.
Now here I hear, but $1,000. Arnold Rothstein at least had a chazakah that he'd gamble it back. Anyway, this is for you, and give one to your grandfather to give to Yitzchak. This is Rav Asher Weiss. One second. Where do I have all my papers here? Yeshua Grinstein, this we spoke about. Here it is. Now, I want to tell you something. Interesting happenings. You all heard of Rabbi Berlwein?
Yes.
Okay, Rabbi Berlwein is now being acclaimed the greatest mind of the 21st century. And I tell you, I can't believe this. This is his weekly newsletter, Chaye Sara. This was written before the Pittsburgh tragedy. It was on Shabbos. This was distributed before Shabbat. Do you know that he predicts that in America they're going to kill Jews? It's beyond words. I recently attended a gathering at the home of friends. This meal was in honor of grandchildren recently married and was celebrating their Sheva Brachas. I was seated next to an American young man who was Haredi in dress and outlook. He was very cordial and friendly to me as I was to him. As the conversation at the table began to address the future of American Jews, many of the around the table expressed misgivings about the future of Jewish life in America, and even about the security of Jews, etc. Wow. My dinner companion, Calvert Learley, told me that there was nothing to worry about, because there are many who vote in America, and the large amount of Torah study guarantees the preservation of the Jewish community. I doubted myself as whether or not I should respond to that rather dubious claim. I finally said that there were greater yeshivas than Babylonia, Spain, North Africa, Iraq, France, Germany, Poland, Romania, Lithuania, Belarus, and the Czech Republic in past times than there are in the United States today, and yet the Jewish communities in all those countries are no longer in existence or of influence in the general Jewish world of today. My companion was shocked at my statement of heresy. And the article goes on. This was written before last Shabbat. Vic, this is for you. You're related, Machakanishaf, to David Newman of Cleveland, right? Have you ever seen the written agenda description of he and his brother, and I think father, when Bubby and Zadie Newman were in Hungary for 3 weeks, I believe this is 1996. Moshe and David, that's him and his brother, joined the parents during their third week in Hungary. This is a description. Have you seen it? It's one of a kind. Pass that back. Look what his father did, Zichrono Livracha, in World War II. His father was in the ghetto, was in the camps. Wherever someone was killed, Jews, buried, he'd write down the names, and after the war, he gave his list of names of Jews killed to the rabbinate. Do you know why? If there were a gunot who survived, their wives, the rabbinate could give a heter knowing that they died. This is the New York Times on Pittsburgh crime scene. Jewish volunteers guard the bodies of holy martyrs. It's about the people who died and the shmirah until their funeral. One of the people, I believe in this article, who's quoted, Rabbi Taub, Chazen Taub, I don't know if in this article, another article, his son was my student in the 1960s. He's in his 90s today. He was a chazan in Philadelphia as an einikel of the Majlis de Rebbe. Taub, T-A-U-B, Taub. An einikel with a good voice. You understand why. New York Times, there is too much evil. Growing anti-Semitism stuns American Jews and declares Rabbi, no, give me his name. Who did we just quote? Rabbi Berewein to be a genius. I'm just adding that to the headline. This is Chabad.
It might not be genius, just prescient.
To be prescient is part of genius. Foresight. This is about our minister Shaked visiting the Rebbe's grave and praying for the Jews of Pittsburgh with endless pictures of Chabadnikim, very famous ones, with her at the Yohel and before they go or after the Yohel.
You know, and survivors were members of that synagogue.
Yeah, no, let me say that. I saw who we're talking about. And I have to tell you, they're being criticized already. Why did Chabad only men are with her? There aren't Chabad women who could have gone with her to the Yohel. They're being criticized. New York Times, back-to-back funerals, mourners 50 deep. It's about the funerals. And this is, Michael, for you. Willie McCovey, 80, dies. With you read the New York Times article? Anyone else of interest? Welcome to a very interesting. He was an interesting ball player, terrific ability. With 512. How many homes? 12. 21. He's equal with Ted Williams, 521. And I was at the stadium right before they dedicated, right before they opened it, the new stadium. And it's right next to water. I don't know if it's a river or an inlet. And it's called McCovey's Cove, something like that. And when there's a ball game, people are in rowboats in the water waiting for a ball to be hit over the fence there and to catch it. That's where his home runs landed. San Francisco, the Giants Stadium in San Francisco, where he played. McCovey's Cove, I called it. In the eulogy in the New York Times, they describe it. And finally, George Soros is being condemned in America. All the right wingers are going after him. He's a Jew from Hungary. We spoke about says Nishta Brekel Yiddishkeit.
He was a traitor,
you say?
Yes. He was a Muslim.
Nishta Abrekel Yiddishkeit in him, and he's a multi-billionaire. And all his money goes to overthrow Torah and the state of Israel and the Republicans, Trump and Republicans in the United States. Until we meet again tomorrow morning at 9:05, Be'ezrat Hanotein Liyov Koach B'sora Tovot Aleinu V'al Kol Yisrael. Das V'danya. Jack, any questions?